Stories excite and wake up people's emotions. Facts and figures don't. Yes, being knowledgeable is imperative and metrics can be impressive, but being likable and relatable is equally as important, maybe even more important. Story selling is the art of telling a story with the aim of attracting your audience so they remember, connect, and perceive the benefits of choosing to work with your practice. But what makes a compelling story that helps influence the buying decisions? Stay with us. We're speaking with an expert about it on today's show. Today, we have Dr. Paul Homley joining us. Paul practiced reconstructive dentistry for 20 years and is now president of Homley Communications, teaching leadership communications with the goal of improving treatment acceptance. Paul holds the highest earned designation in professional speaking from the National Speakers Association Certified Speaking Professional and is the first dentist in the world to earn the honor. We are very happy to have him with us today about storytelling and how it can be used to attract patients to an orthodontic practice. Dr. Homley, welcome to the show.
Hey, Richie, glad to be here. This ought to be good. You know, I've been in my bunker here for the last several months. I'm sure like a lot of our listeners and you have too. So it's nice to have this little touch here. So thanks. So tell me about today, Richie. What are we going to talk about?
So I'm curious about your career path. If you could just give us a kind of overall of your career path. It sounds very interesting.
Yeah, I've loved it. I loved it. University of Illinois graduate, 1975, went right into the United States Navy. That was one of the best moves I ever made, Richie, right there. I was stationed at Cherry Point, North Carolina, Marine Corps Air Station. I was a general dentist, and my commanding officer, Dr. Lou Muldrow, told me, Homley, you're going into oral surgery. So I worked with Mel Davis, who was a base oral surgeon, and Richie, for 2 years, took out hundreds of wisdom teeth, assisted in the operating room. When I got out of the Navy, I had a real strong dental alveolar surgical experience and confidence. I went right into the Pankey Institute, right through Dawson. And in 1978, you ready for this? I placed my first dental implant. Implants back then compared to now were, you know, back then it was the dinosaur. It was blade implants, so periostals, ramus frames, that type of thing. But lucky for me and lucky for my patients, Richie, I had the Pankey Institute and the Dawson occlusion understanding. So I really focused on implants on the edentulous mandible, opposing traditional removable upper dentures. And those types of restorations did really, really well. As a matter of fact, I got a phone call about a year ago. It was an email, and the email said, "Dear Dr. Homley, I don't know if you remember me, but my name is Bob Heimer, and you did implants on me many years ago." And I'm thinking, Bob Heimer? Who? Bob Heimer? He was my first dental implant case.
It was a
full arch mandibular implant. It's called a ramus frame. And I'm thinking, I figured out the math, it was 42 years ago. And I thought, oh my God, this guy's calling me, his mandible fell off. You know, some bad news. He calls me, and he's Southern. I was practicing in a little town called Hildebrand, North Carolina at the time. He says, Dr. Hartley, he says, this is Bob Heimer. I don't know if you remember me or not, but those teeth you put in, boy, they're just wonderful. But, you know, one of them cracked off. It was an overdenture that would come on and off of an implant bar.
Richie,
one of the teeth cracked off, and what do you think I should do? And I went, oh, thank goodness. the teeth broke, not the implant.
Yeah, exactly.
So that was 1978. In 1979, Richie, it became legal for dentists to advertise their practice. So,
I didn't know that. It was illegal before then, huh?
Yeah, 1979 in the state of Arizona. It became legal and ethical for dentists to market their practice. Well, I jumped on that right away. It took the rest of the dental profession another 10 years to really get into the swing of things. But by 1983, I evolved my practice to marketing and good dentistry and good referral-based development into an all-implant practice. I moved to Charlotte, North Carolina, after about 4 years in my little town of Hildebrand. And there I built a nice big practice, had associates, built a commercial dental laboratory. I at the time I was best friends with Dr. Carl Misch. I think probably a lot of listeners will remember Carl. Carl and his brother Craig and several other faculty members, we kind of co-founded the Misch International Implant Institute, and it's still going strong to this day.
Oh, you co-founded at Institute. That's great.
Yeah. Well, with Carl, you know, I wasn't the brains behind the outfit. Carl and his brother and other faculty members, Carl brought me in because we knew each other from association meetings. And I was pretty good with implant surgery. So Carl brought me in to teach implant surgery and prosthetics. I did that for about 5 years, Richie. But
yeah.
I discovered after a period of time that a lot of dentists, they were really good with their hands, but they could not, they couldn't sell dental implants. They were all constipated on showing patients, here's how we're going to make the incisions and here's how we're going to cut the bone. And
yeah.
They're going, wow, you know, I don't know about that. So
yeah, exactly. That's not really selling it, huh?
You know, they thought it was. They think educating patients was the same thing as influencing them. And
yes.
Of course it isn't.
Of course.
And so I had a terrific career. Rebuilding people's mouths. At the end of my career, I retired in 1995. I had a right eye disability.
Yeah.
And at the end of my career, I had implanted and restored about 4,500 patients, either partially or totally edentulous patients with dental implants. So it was 95. In 95 and 96 and beyond, I kind of reinvented myself. I said, well, if I'm not going to practice dentistry, what else can I do?
Mm.
And so I started my company, Homily Communications. And I started to do what I do to this day, is I teach dentists and teams how to make it easy for patients to say yes. I also do quite a bit of work with key opinion leaders, training key opinion leaders to be speakers. I work with associations, large dental service organizations.
Yeah.
My work on treatment acceptance has been installed in some of the largest dental service organizations. And it's really contributes to millions of dollars of collections every month for my clients. So
wow.
I've got experience working with solo practitioners, very large dental service organizations, specialists, and everything in between. The only areas I really don't get into would be like pediatric dentistry or endodontics. That's kind of outside my scope. So there you kind of have it in a nutshell, Richie.
Oh, there you go. So just hearing some of your talks recently, storytelling is a huge part of what you put together when you're doing a dental marketing campaign. You really believe in it. So can you tell us a little bit about how storytelling is important for dental marketing? How is it helping people and doctors achieve their goals?
Well, you know, this is a great story.
Okay? Oh, yeah.
This is a great story. I had just left practice. It's 1995. And I got a little office. And I'm sitting there waiting for the phone to ring.
Oh, that's a fun feeling.
I sent out a bunch of postcards. Hey, I'm Homily Communications. I can help you sell dentistry. I didn't have anything, no books, nothing. Just, yeah. You know, just a twinkle in my eye, Richie.
Yeah.
And so I got this direct mail from the National Storytellers Association. I thought, damn, that's for me. Because all the great speakers I heard were good storytellers. At the time, I was a member of the National Speakers Association. And I said, wow, man, I love those stories. So I went to Jonesboro, Tennessee,
okay.
to the annual jamboree of the National Storytellers Association. I'm sitting in the back of a big circus tent, big outdoor tent, hundreds of school kids, you know, babies in backpacks, old men in these magnificent old flannel shirts and stocking caps.
That's quite an image. Okay.
and the first speaker, I'm looking at the brochure. The brochure is one piece of paper that was mimeographed, back in the old mimeograph days. Okay.
Okay.
And the stage is an old wooden stage that kind you'd see at a high school pep rally. Single
yes.
mic. Some guy with a ponytail sitting by a soundboard, you know, tapping the mic, make sure it works. First guy's speaker, guy's name was Ray Hicks. I thought, who is Ray Hicks? he gets up there and I'm thinking, what? And the guy's got jeans on and a vest and a ball cap. But Richie, this guy starts out telling the story of Jack and the Beanstalk. I'm thinking, Jack and the Beanstalk, who hasn't heard that story? But
yeah, really.
But the way he told it, fee, fi, fo, right? And the kids, the audience is 80% kids.
Oh, okay. This makes sense. Yeah.
And the kids are sitting on the ground looking up at the stage. It was better than a movie. I'm listening to this guy. All of a sudden, I'm sitting in the back of the tent. I hear this train whistle. Whoo-hoo! And I turn around, and there's a split in the tent. I open it up. There's a set of railroad tracks right behind me.
Yeah.
Ray Hicks, he keeps going about fee, fi, fo, fum, and now, whoo-hoo! The train whistle's getting louder, and I'm beginning to feel the ground shake, right? The tracks are right behind the tent. And pretty soon the train comes by the back of the and it roars by, and Ray Hicks stops, pulls out a harmonica, cups it to the mic, and goes, wah, wah. You know that Doppler sound?
Yeah. Yep.
And the audience just kind of went, oh. And then they turned back to Ray, and I thought, I have never, ever seen a speaker so capable of having the audience right in his hand. And I thought, you know, I'm going to bottle up some of this magic.
Yeah, that is a lot of power and magic right there. Seriously.
I'm going to bottle up and I'm going to bring it to dentistry. Mm. Well, I did. And I wrote a book. And I have a whole process called story selling. And what storytelling is all about, it's creating the emotional experience for the listener. In dentistry, we're all about cognitive facts and figures. Patient education is the holy grail. You mm-hmm. talk to any practice management consultant, and they'll say, you ask them, what's the secret to case acceptance? It'll be patient education. Educate.
Yeah.
Well, don't believe it. The truth is that patient education is horribly overrated as a factor of influence. Yes, you can educate patients, but how many dentists have had well-educated patients who, after they hear the treatment plan, they kind of rub their chin and they say, well, doc, I want to go home and think about it. Well, I'll tell you what, yeah. they're not going home to think about it. They're going home to drink about it.
Yeah, I bet they are. Yeah, that's the worst. If you don't make the sale right then, I mean, the chance is just...
Yeah. So
it's going to happen.
Storytelling, what I did is I created an entity called Story Selling. And Story Selling is combining a narrative, which when I just told you about Ray Hicks and it, that's the narrative, okay?
Yeah.
And Story Selling is combining a narrative with your topic, and you heard me do it. I told you the narrative of Ray Hicks, but right at the end of that story, I said, wow, I'd like to bottle up some of that magic and bring it to dentistry. And then I transferred it to my topic. I said, well, that's what I did. I wrote a book. And so the narrative introduces the concept, the transferable concept, transfers it to the topic. So the listener not only feels it and see, could you see the kids sitting on the ground, Richie, looking up?
Yeah, right.
Right. And so in the treatment presentation process, or better yet, during the new patient interview, find an opportunity to tell a story. And the stories can be about a lot of things. One of the best stories I would ever tell patients, and after a while, you'll get 6 or 7 stories that you can kind of use, kind of like silver bullets in your belt. Yeah. One of the stories that I would use would be sort of like during an examination. I'd be kind of in the middle of the exam, and I kind of stop things a little bit, and I look down at the patient and I said, you know what? You remind me of my Aunt Dorothy. Patient would look, really? You can't do this on everyone, but you pick the patient. She said, really? I said, oh yeah, my aunt Dorothy. I grew up in Chicago, Illinois. Suburb of rather Cicero, Illinois, suburb of Chicago, big Polish Catholic Lithuania neighborhood. And every year we would have the Christmas party at Auntie Dorothy's house. And I bring my kids. Oh, you have kids? Oh yeah, I got two kids. Well, tell me about your family. And so she's asking me about my family.
Yep.
And building I say rapport. Things like, well, you know, I'm really proud of my son. My son, Adam, masqueraded as a college student for 7 years. And she'd laugh and she'd tell me about her son and we'd kind of go back and forth. And then in the middle of it, I would say, okay, let's finish this exam. Well, what did I do? What I did is I let her, Richie, examine me. I let her discover my character through my story. So storytelling is a way for your patients to give you the exam.
That's great. Yeah, absolutely. You're bringing their kids, they're going. I mean, they want to build a relationship with you and kind of trust you and feel good around you. That's so important.
Absolutely. You want to like the person that's going to come at you with a needle, don't you think?
Yeah, right? That's a good point.
and you think about it, Richie, what constitutes trust? Well, I'll tell you what. The first thing that's got to happen before anybody is going to trust any dentist, and this is true for orthodontists, this is true for the people who work at the front desk, this is true for general dentists, before anybody's going to trust you, they first need to like you. There needs to be a likability thing to this. And if you think about it, what do most dentists do?
Yeah.
Right? What's likable about full mouth x-rays? What's likable about a periodontal probing? What's likable about alginate study models?
Yeah. Unless you're in the field, that really doesn't do anything for you, I have to admit.
And so much of what constitutes the initial patient experience are unlikable experiences.
That makes sense.
So that's a little bit on story selling.
So can you tell us about a few other components needed to craft a compelling story when you're doing through this storytelling process?
Well, one of the most important aspects of storytelling is a concept called disclosure. Disclosure is when the listener gets a view of you that's beyond your primary role. So for example, as a dentist, the primary role of a dentist or an orthodontist is what they do clinically. What disclosure does, it reveals the secondary roles of maybe they're a husband or a wife or a son or daughter or a hockey player or a gourmet chef or a ballroom dancer or a baseball coach or those other aspects of the person's life. And when a content expert, dentist, orthodontist, financial planner, architect, banker, private equity investment specialist, whatever the technical expertise is, the client usually has far less technical understanding of what the content expert is talking about.
Oh, absolutely.
Right? So the content expert is up here and the client is down here, and it's hard for them to find common ground. There is no common ground. You're the expert, you're not, that kind of thing. But what disclosure does, it creates common ground. See, if I talk about my role as a person, let's say my role as a ballroom dancer. I'm not a good ballroom dancer. I'm not. But I know enough to fake it.
Yeah. Okay.
My current wife, sweet Lisa, our first date, this goes back 15, 16 years now.
Yeah.
Okay. Our first date was at Alexander's Restaurant in suburban Oak Brook, Illinois. Beautiful restaurant, really nice.
Yeah.
And I was living in Charlotte, North Carolina at the time. We met through a matchmaking service. Oh, this is a great story.
Okay? Interesting, yeah.
So we met through a matchmaking service and I think this woman is just too good to be true. So I fly to Chicago for a date. I am really committed on this.
Yeah, story. Seriously.
Okay. And so she lived in a suburb of Chicago called Indian Head Park. I picked her up. We went to Alexander's restaurant. We had a great meal. And during the meal, we were talking, and I'm thinking, you know, disclosure. We need to find out about each other. It turns out she at one time was a competitive ballroom dancer. That was one of the things I liked in her curriculum vitae, you know?
Yeah, you, right. Interesting. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And so, we finished the meal. We go up to the hostess area, okay? And it's, you know, they got the front desk area and they got a big aquarium and it's a big foyer area. And Michael Bublé sings the song called Home, and it's a waltz. Okay.
Perfect.
Yeah. I know enough of a waltz to fake it.
Yeah.
So the music is playing. I said, Lisa, would you like to have a dance? And she looked at me kind of like, you wouldn't dance. And it's all sorts of people are waiting to be seated, Richie.
Yeah. So So
I took my frame, right? I took my frame, pulled her nice and tight, and we waltzed around this reception area. I'm telling you, you talk about icebreaker. That was like,
yeah, what a
big thing. Well,
absolutely. Great impression.
That story that I just told you, what does that reveal to you that I didn't say? What do you know about me now that I didn't say?
That you didn't say? That you can dance, you're bold, willing to take risks?
Am I a fun guy?
Yeah, right? Of course, right?
Am I a fun guy? Will I fly to Chicago for a date, right? Mm-hmm. You know, those types of things kind of gives you some insight into, now how can dentists use this? How can team members use it?
Yeah.
Every day. Every day they can use it. So I would say that, especially for team members, because team members oftentimes have much or more contact with patients than dentists do. Team members need to have like three or four different stories. The first story they need to have is why they love working here. Two, why they love working with patients. Three, where they grew up. And four, their favorite thing to do in their life, okay? And just pulling these things out about, for example, let's say Sheila works at the front desk and the new patient comes in and she's kind of chit-chatting with the patient. And let's say Sheila has a bunch of recipe cards on the desk and she pulls out one and she tells the new patient, hey, I'm working on a new recipe for pumpkin pie for Thanksgiving. Do you bake or cook? Well, that's a pretty safe question to ask most women. Women that don't say, well, here's a good recipe you could try. Women that do, you say, well, what do you think about this? And then she can tell a story about how she likes to cook and her husband comes in and he's the tasting guy. And is it sweet, sour, spicy, or salty, right? All of that stuff. And what it does, it's so much better than a conversation about, well, when's the last time you've been to the dentist? And do you have diphtheria?
A thousand times, yeah. Yeah. You actually become a person and not something.
Yeah. Okay, so the first aspect is disclosure. Great stories disclose. Secondly, the story has to relate to the purpose of the appointment.
Hmm.
Okay, the story just can't, you just can't.
Yeah, that sounds a little trickier. Okay.
Yeah, you've got to relate it. You've got to relate it to what you do. So go back to the front desk person with the recipe cards. After they're done talking about the pie, you say, well, you know, Mrs. Smith is the new patient. Mrs. Smith, one reason that I love working here is that, you know, really, if fine dentistry is a lot like a recipe, there's a lot that goes into it. And I can't wait till you meet our chef, Dr. Homley, right? And it's kind of a fun way of, you know, it's just a better, it's just a distinctive way of talking. Now, here's the question I have for you, Richie. The next time that new patient comes in, what does she know about that woman at the front desk? Will she remember that woman's name? Will she remember that she cooks?
Oh, yeah, of course. It's easy to bring up conversation again as well.
Absolutely. So disclosure, let people know a little bit about who you are and your character. And number two, link it to the desired outcome professionally, what you want to have happen. Okay?
All right.
And that's called story selling.
So if you want to start becoming a better storyteller, what are the steps you think someone should take?
First step is the easiest. This is what you do. Richie will do it for you. Give me a sense of of a professional situation where you need to influence people?
When I need to influence people? Oh, yeah, of course.
When you need to influence someone, just give me the scenario. Where are you and what do you do and what are you trying to influence?
All right. So a lot of times when I put my hat on for Ortho Sales Engine, we're having a discovery call with a brand new orthodontist who needs help increasing their new patients, right?
Okay.
So they've seen us online. They've built a little bit digital rapport, but they don't really know who I am. And we get on Zoom just like we are now. You know, I've got to tell them what we do, of course. I've got to learn a little bit about them, but really it's so much of it's just selling me and our team. Like, would you like to work with us? Would it be a positive or negative experience?
Okay. All right. Now I know the scenario. Here's the second question. I want you to, in about a minute and a half, tell me about your first car.
My first car?
Yeah, your first car. Tell me about your first car.
Oh, that's fascinating, actually. So my first car is a 1950 Chevy sedan. My dad is a mechanic. He's been a mechanic since he was 17 years old. And of course I got into it. I'm a kid and he's telling me that was one of his first cars. So we found it in someone's yard. I convinced them to let me buy it. I don't even remember how I got the cash for it, but we got it running in there in the yard and we got it home somehow, probably totally illegal to drive it home, I'm sure. Right. And that's how I learned to drive stick shift. I know that's a lot many people know how to do that, but I learned that when I was 14. There's three on the tree, right?
Right.
And I remember the first time.
Shifter?
Yep.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm a skinny little 150-pound kid soaking wet, moving this, what is it, back then, 50-60-year-old car. And the clutch, it's not like newer cars where it's kind of like a toy clutch, you know? It's like a huge, your muscles are doing all the work. There's a lot of play going on. And I had no idea what I was doing. So I was popping the clutch too fast and the car would jerk, like bounce when you do it wrong. So the whole car's like bouncing down the road. My dad's like, press down the clutch, you know? So, I mean, that was my first experience, was like jerking a 1950 Chevrolet down the street, trying not to crash it and get yelled at by my dad. But it was super fun and exciting once I got it. I remember that.
Okay. So now we got a narrative.
Yeah.
And we also have a business outcome. The business outcome is you want orthodontists to subscribe to OrthoThrive to market their practice, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So you're on a call with a patient, you're on a call with a client, and they ask you, so what's the story with OrthoThrive? Well, you know, it's a lot like years ago, my dad said to me, well, Richie, you're 16, have you ever thought about getting a car? And I thought, are you kidding me? I dream about getting a car. He said, come on. We jumped in his old truck and he took me to Al's junkyard. And there she was, a 1950 four-door Chevy sedan, three-speed on the column stick shift. It didn't run. So we hooked it up to my dad's truck, dragged it home. 6 weeks later, we were ready to crank it up. I remember my dad handed me the key. I slipped it into the ignition. He said, be sure it's in neutral now. All neutral. I turned it. And away we went. And I learned to drive stick shift. And stick shift, it's really unusual. It's really uncomfortable when you first learn to do it because the car jumps. But over time, you can get really good at it. Well, that's what OrthoThrive is about. It's about learning something new that in the beginning might feel a little odd, but after a while, you'll get the hang of it.
Interesting.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
There we go. So what did I do? Disclosure, talked about your dad. What did I say that I didn't say? What's your relationship with your dad like?
Yeah, close relationship. Absolutely. Family matters. Yeah.
And is that a good personal characteristic?
Clients,
yes, it is. Right? The fact that you together you drag this car out of the junkyard and you work on it. What does that tell about your ability to work hard? What does it tell about your ability to have following through on a vision?
Mm-hmm. Right?
There's a lot of unspoken messages in there. Plus, could you see the column shifter?
Yeah, right? Absolutely. Yeah.
So it's a visual experience. So all I did was just, so the answer to your question, the first step you asked me, how do you get started? The way you get started is you think back in your memory, Richie, and you think back about the times where something touched you emotionally, something that you felt strongly about. Waltzing in Alexander's restaurant, driving stick shift for the first time. These are very common events. And what great stories are about ordinary events told extraordinarily well. So think about those moments that move you. And I'll guarantee you, anything that moves you will move somebody else because we're very much alike emotionally. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. So what if you're like a really introverted person? Like, can you still be a good storyteller? Are there obstacles to overcome? What would you say to someone like that?
I think you have an advantage if you're an introvert. You know, when I take the Myers-Briggs test, a lot of people think I'm an extrovert. I am not. I test ambivert. Extroverts over here, introverts over here. I test right about here.
Yeah, okay.
The real malignant extrovert, I can't stand talking to them because they're all the time.
I feel you there. I'm in the same boat.
You know what I'm saying? the more introverted you are, the more time you'll spend really thinking about what's important to me, what moves me emotionally, and how does that relate to what I'm doing? You know, I'm sitting here thinking about this, for some reason, you know, Thanksgiving is coming up, and I remember every Thanksgiving, my older brother Guy, who was a letterman in high school sophomore year, was full scholarship to University of Illinois, played free safety, ran back to punts and kickoffs for the Cleveland Browns. Okay, that's my older brother Guy. Wow. His friends and my friends every Thanksgiving played what we called the Turkey Bowl. We did that for close to 25 years. My team lost every year.
Of course, yeah.
But the thing that I remember the most about the Turkey Bowl is watching my dad age. Because my dad would always play on my brother Guy's team. You know, and when I was in grade school playing the Turkey Bowl, my dad was throwing big passes and throwing blocks and all that. But by the time I hit college, my dad could hardly run. And I don't need to finish this story, but can you feel the emotion coming up?
Absolutely. Because you're kind of putting yourself in the story.
You're putting yourself in the story. So yeah. It's that kind of thing. What moves you emotionally? And then you think about that. And then you say, well, then how does that relate to my topic? Right? Some practices over time begin to move more slowly, right? Relating it to my dad moving more slowly, right? And sometimes they need to kind of pick up their knees and get going. That's what orthotherapy does.
So how much of this storytelling do you think should just be in a presentation? How much should be on text or video on your website, in your ads, on your brochures, other marketing? How do you know? Does it matter where you're sharing it?
You know, I do. I get asked that a lot, Richie. You know, to me, great stories is like A1 sauce. You know, too much ruins the steak. Not enough is not enough.
Yep.
For me, that's the art of influence. That's the art of being a good speaker, is knowing when to drop into a story. And what I do is I kind of give content. I give content and I'll drop into a story. The story kind of piques listener interest. And then when I really have you thinking about something, then I'll drop back up to content. So it's kind of pique interest with the story, then make a point. Pique, then point. Pique, then point. So I kind of oscillate through. Is there a secret formula? No. It's more of a feeling. And when you do it long enough, you have stories that you've told before that you know are reliable. And you can kind of sense where the listener is.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the big things is in an influential conversation, doctor to patient, team member to patient, salesperson to prospect, is to kind of know where the listener is. Are they listening? Have you lost them? And one of the things that I do is when I sense that the listener's kind of drifting away, if I'm telling a story, I'll stop it. If I'm giving content and the listener's drifting away, I'll start a story. So when I begin to lose a listener, when I begin to lose a listener, whatever I'm doing, I'll stop and I'll go to, if I'm telling a story and they're sleeping, I'll stop telling a story and go to content, right? So I'm always, it's like golf. You push a shot to the right, well, the next one you yank to the left, right? You go back and forth like that.
Wow, great advice. All right, so if someone thinks they might need some help from you, where should they go? What is the process? What kind of people are the best type of doctors or practices that really connect with what you're offering?
I would say that, you know, for practitioners, you know, once you got your feet on the ground, once you're not worrying about making a buck, because young dentists, young specialists are coming out of practice now and they need to eat.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, there's a lot to learn in dentistry after you graduate dental school, after you get on your specialty program. But I would say as you're in year, I don't know, 4 or 5, somewhere in there, after you kind of catch your breath a little bit and you've got cognitive space to maybe bring on something else besides technical dentistry, that's a good time to start. The easy answer would be, well, start as soon as possible, but that's not realistic for a lot of people. What I would suggest if people want more information, just go to my website. It's my name, paulhomily.com.
That's easy.
And look under speaker development, workshops. I do live online programs like Zoom, like we're doing right now.
Yeah.
I also have recorded online programs on treatment acceptance, where I integrate story selling into the treatment acceptance process. So just go online and check things out. I've got books, online programs, and that kind of thing. That's a good place to start.
Well, great. Really enjoyed talking to you today. And I'm definitely going to incorporate stories more into life and my presentations. Absolutely. I'll check out your book.
There you go.
Dr. Homley, thank you so much for being on. It was great talking to you.
Good. Have me back. Let's talk about something else next time.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think
we'll all right, Richard. Bye for now.
All right, take it easy. Bye. Once in a while, you have an interview that you know is going to change how you kind of interact with the world. And I'll tell you, this is one of those interviews. It's going to change how I communicate with people in business and in my personal life. I mean, telling stories with someone that doesn't really know you in maybe a discovery call, which we talked about in this episode, can really make a huge difference on the rapport you're building with them. I think that was really fascinating. And even I remembered all the people in my life that were such good storytellers, and I didn't understand what was happening, but there is a magic behind some good storytelling. And I think Dr. Homley really hit the nail on the head on how important it is, and he gave us some really good little tidbits on how to make our storytelling better, how to up our game when we're storytelling. So I was really excited about this episode. I think you'll get a lot out of it. Keep grinding, keep thriving. I'll see you next time.